Hello, and welcome to show number 2539 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy. I've been very fortunate that as my vision declined over the years, technology improved so that I was able to maintain all my functionality and access to many of the tools I needed to use at work and school.
The last 2 weeks, we re-aired a pair of old shows in which we talked with Dean Blasey, Jim Fruchterman, and Ted Henter, who respectively were very important in the development of braille displays, optical character recognition, and screen readers. And this week, what we'll be talking about reflects how the existence of those tools and the modernization of them has been crucial in Pete's being able to access information.
And I used all of them throughout the years.
And this week, we'll be talking about the evolution of assistive technologies, many of which Pete's used over the decades, and going all the way from some fairly rudimentary tools up to the latest AI applications. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is stay on top of what adaptive aids are available or coming soon, because if your needs don't change, what's available to support your needs will probably change.
And remember, these tools and technologies are always changing, so don't assume just because you're using a tool now and it works great that it will serve all your purposes in the future.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start with a quick review of what tools were available when Pete was a youth and, of course, also a student in the 1950s and 60s.
And just as a bit of background, I was born with congenital glaucoma in the early 50s. People didn't realize that could happen to young people. But I was fortunate that I actually had some vision. I was able to hold a printed book within several inches of my face and be able to read books until about the time I went to graduate school. Although I did attend a school for the blind for the first 5 years of my education.
And that's where you learned Braille.
I did. And although I didn't use Braille much until I got to graduate school and sometimes now for notices and stickers and things like that, it was my mom who taught me how to read and write. And mostly I used print throughout my education.
And in terms of dealing with the rest of the world, you had some very rudimentary tools. You weren't even using a white cane at the time, but you had a small monocular. You had a typewriter because your handwriting was never so great. What else did you use?
That was basically the tools I used at school. My little monocular was actually a little telescope that you could hold in your hand. It was all folded up with prisms, so it was quite small. So I could read the blackboard with that. And for reading anything else, like I said, I just looked very closely at things. When I was playing with my friends, I would use larger balls or brighter balls, and they were very accommodating. When kids are young, they often don't think about things like that. They just want to play. So it all worked out pretty well.
You mentioned you were at a school for the blind through fifth grade, and obviously they knew to accommodate all of the students with whatever level of vision loss they had. But after that, you went to a mainstream public school. What kind of accommodations did they provide?
They started me out with an itinerant teacher with a few visits, but after a while, they figured I was really pretty self-sufficient. The major accommodation they made was that I didn't go to any gym classes because I had had some detached retinas, and they didn't want me bunking into things and detaching my retina again. So that always provided me with extra study halls or extra classes I could take instead of gym.
There was a low vision student in my class in high school, And some of the teachers liked to present exams by writing the questions on the blackboard at the front of the room. Well, Todd couldn't see that, so they always handed him a paper copy that he could keep close to his face near his desk. Did you get similar things?
Teachers occasionally did that for me because it was harder to read the blackboard with my little handheld monocular. And then also when I took the SAT exams to get into college, I was given large print copies of that and additional time during those tests.
Eyes on Success connects corporate sponsors with visually impaired listeners around the world.
More information about becoming a sponsor can be found at www.sponsor.eyesonsuccess.net.
Let's talk about the next phase of Pete's life, pretty much graduate school and his working career, because his vision was very different then than it was as an undergraduate and younger. This would have been the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, partway into the 2000s, and then ultimately we retired. And we'll be talking about the more modern tools that are now available in the next segment.
So as I mentioned earlier, I had glaucoma from when I was born, and towards the end of my undergraduate education, the pressure in my eyes was really out of control, and there were many days where my eyes just were very blurry and I couldn't read, and I learned to just do the work when I could see the work. And my eye doctors really wanted to perform another surgery, but because I had so many surgeries as a child, they thought it was very risky. And indeed, the day after I got my undergraduate degree in physics, I drove up to Philadelphia to have yet one more surgery, and indeed it left me totally blind. And I had a fellowship to go to graduate school in September, so I took the opportunity that summer to relearn some of my Braille skills. That's when I learned to use a cane to get around, because I needed to get around a new environment at graduate school, and I just learned to do things without sight that summer.
So this was totally new. You had been able to use the print textbooks all the way through your undergraduate studies. What did you do when you got to graduate school?
Well, I went to the school to find out from my professors what books they were going to use. And of course, those weren't in Braille or recorded, and Bookshare wasn't around back then. But Recording for the Blind was around back then, and I was able to send them copies of the textbooks that I would use in graduate school, and they had people record them. So some of them were ready by the time I got to my first classes in graduate school that fall, but many were not. And fortunately, as I said, students and kids are pretty easygoing, and my colleagues in graduate school actually read me some of my books on cassette tape and gave them to me so that I could keep up with my classes.
And Recording for the Blind has evolved in both its mission and its name, and it is now Learning Ally.
And now we have tools like Bookshare that are available, where they've partnered with publishers to acquire digital copies of most textbook these days. So it's a lot easier to deal with.
So through graduate school and earlier in your career at Xerox, your vision had cleared up somewhat after that surgery at the beginning of graduate school, and you were able to read a little bit if it was very high contrast and very magnified, like each character was a couple of inches tall. How did you work that out? What kind of equipment did you use? And I understand your colleagues were helpful with that as well.
Well, as you mentioned, halfway through my first year of graduate school, my eyesight did clear up a little bit, and I was able to use a CCTV with lots of contrast and really large print to read my textbooks. And then also, it was difficult for me to take notes in my classes, and I couldn't use my monocular anymore because that wouldn't help me see the blackboard. But my friends were good enough to lend me their notes that they took in class. The funny part was that I didn't find those useful at all, because often students were so busy taking notes, they never understood what the notes meant afterwards. They never really paid attention to what the professor was saying. So sometimes I would try and copy their notes and I'd ask, well, what is this all about? And they say, I don't know. So I found it more efficient to listen to the lectures or read the textbooks ahead of time to see what the professor thought was important. And I learned that way. And I actually paid more attention to what the professors were saying in the classes than my colleagues did. And that worked out quite efficiently.
For anybody who is familiar with modern CCTV magnifiers, this device that Pete had 40 years ago was nothing like that. The camera was as long as his forearm. The display was an old CRT television. It was nearly as big as a beach ball. The contrast, although nominally high, was nothing like what you get now. The sharpness and clarity were nothing like what you get now in a device that you can hold in the palm of your hand and use with all sorts of nifty features and adjustments.
And of course, none of them were color. These were real beasts of machines. There was nothing that was portable back then.
Eventually, your vision declined to where even the huge magnification didn't do you any good. What kind of braille and speech would have been available to you in the 1980s?
After I got to Xerox working as a research scientist, after I got my PhD in engineering physics, I used my CCTV for a while. But as you said, my vision slowly declined. And so I transitioned to using speech. You remember what those early speech synthesizers sounded like?
Couldn't understand a word.
You got it. It was really garbled. But at least it was something. But I was half listening and half looking at things back then. One of the early machines that I found very useful was the VersaBraille device. This was a little 20-cell Braille note taker whose memory was essentially a cassette tape, where you would take notes onto that and you'd rewind back and forth to find what you wanted. But it was very useful to me.
And there were an assortment of those devices that you would change from one to the next as the technology evolved, correct?
Oh, yeah. As the technology evolved, there were many changes in Braille displays. First, it became 40-cell Braille displays. Eventually, Xerox bought me an 80-cell Braille display.
That was bright purple. It was really nifty.
The salesman never told me that.
Fortunately, you had a wife to tell you that.
Fortunately, I was working at Xerox also. I remember spilling a cup of coffee on that once. Those are expensive displays to fix if you do that. I was much more careful with coffee and drinks around it after that. But then there came to be Braille note takers like the old Typelight system from Freedom Scientific and then the Packmate note takers and Braille displays, which I found very handy taking to meetings so I could take and read notes when I was giving presentations. Those were very handy.
And eventually the speech got good enough to be usable.
Well, as you know, yeah, the speech synthesizers are really good these days. There have been dramatic changes in speech synthesis technology since then.
In the early days, Xerox Corporation actually bought Kurzweil, and they managed to find a couple of employees who could benefit from having a Kurzweil reading machine, and you were one of the lucky fellows.
I'm sure you remember that machine. It was as big as a small dishwasher that I put in the corner of my office. And I really tried to use it for lots of things. I would put on memos that Xerox sent around on paper back then.
The Xerox proprietary fonts used ligatures in which many of the characters were physically connected to their neighboring characters, and the OCR couldn't handle that.
Did not like that. And then I said, well, if I can't read the Xerox internal memos, maybe I'll put on some fun books that were just personal books. And I remember putting on a book by Woody Allen one day. It was a paperback book. And it started reading, and I heard orgasm. It recognized one word on the page.
But eventually, the optical character recognition got good, and the speech synthesis got good, and you've been able to use combinations of those since then.
Right. The other big change over the years was, as you recall, since you were my hardware support, any new technology such as a screen magnifier or the next speech synthesizer, that all had to be done in hardware. You'd buy a $2,000 speech synthesis board that you would put inside my computer.
Oh, I was inside every single computer you ever had.
I was the software guy, you were the hardware person. But these days, that's all done in software. You want a new speech synthesizer? You just download it and install it. You want a new screen magnifier? Same thing. Updates come out. You don't have to buy an entire new board. You just download the update and install the update. What a big change.
And the other thing was, an awful lot of this was happening before the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed. And fortunately, Xerox Corporation was very generous and had a corporate policy long before the ADA that they would provide whatever accommodations somebody needed in order to be able to do their job. And so they bought Pete generation after generation of adaptive tools.
Oh, whatever I needed. Money was no object. No one ever questioned me as to what adaptive aids that I'd want, even if it was just a new version to get some of the new capabilities. They were very easy to get along with in that regard, very supportive.
Over the years, there was a wide variety of adaptive technology available. One of my fellow graduate students at the University of Chicago used an Opticon to get himself all the way through a PhD program in theoretical chemistry. Did you ever use one of those? And first, describe what it did. This was a very different type of device.
So the Opticon had a little handheld camera that you would scan over a printed page, and then you would put your finger on a very dense array of vibrating reeds, sort of like feeling a toothbrush, and you were supposed to feel the print going by under your hand. And as we mentioned in the tip, as new technologies come along, it's your role as the visually impaired person to find out about these technologies, test them, try them out, see what's best for the job. So I had Xerox buy me an Opticon, and I tried to use it, but I found it impossible. And they do say that people who used to use print had a harder time adjusting to the Opticon. So that became a dormant device for me. But, you know, I figured it's worth trying. It could help with some things.
So one thing that you found very useful, in fact, necessary in your career was, once people started using graphical user interfaces, the screen readers needed to become much more sophisticated. How did you deal with that?
Well, as Xerox transitioned to Windows, I actually tried out 4 or 5 screen readers to use with Windows, and I almost gave up. And then I figured I'd try one more, and that turned out to be JAWS. And I've never looked back since. JAWS actually just worked. And I think that's because the main developer was blind himself. He had to make it work. Many of the others were developed by primarily sighted people. So they thought they had it working for someone who was blind, but, you know, you really have to test it out in a real use environment. So I've been very happy with that, and that was a real enabler. And I still use JAWS, of course, these days.
And over the years, JAWS has gotten more and more sophisticated, but some of the more sophisticated aspects we'll get to in the next segment.
So throughout my career, I did use a variety of devices. The technologies kept on improving. And as you keep pointing out, the improvements in technologies sort of really kept pace with the decline in my vision. So I was very fortunate to have ridden that wave at the right time.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Hard as it is to imagine, we actually retired nearly 20 years ago when Xerox offered us one of these packages where they were encouraging their senior people to retire. And that was at the very end of 2005. And since then, there's been a veritable explosion of novel technologies, many of them involving artificial intelligence tools. So In the previous segment where we were talking about what you used at work, you talked about JAWS, but what kinds of more sophisticated capabilities have been added to JAWS in the last 10 or 20 years?
Well, even prior to AI, JAWS changed a lot because the web is always changing, applications are always changing, and they had to keep up with that, and they really did. But since some of these new AI tools have come out, JAWS has really jumped on that wagon and incorporated AI into the JAWS environment. So now I can ask AI for help in JAWS, how to do a particular task. I don't have to read through the whole manual or remember hundreds of hotkeys. I can ask what the screen looks like and many other AI tools, which we'll talk about in a future show when we talk about JAWS.
So what other tools have you found particularly helpful that have been developed in the last 10 or 20 years?
Well, just as you think things can't get any better and you really have tremendous access and that's all you'll ever need, things do change and some of these new tools are incredible. I mean, if I think of some of the tools on my phone like Be My Eyes to be able to take a picture and describe that picture, then to ask follow-up questions. And Be My Eyes kind of started that, but there are many other services that offer similar capabilities. Ira does for the blind. You can ask ChatGPT to take a picture and look at it. You can ask Gemini to look at videos and describe what's going on as you move your camera around. And you can even have Gemini look at the screen on your computer or on your phone to tell you what's on the screen and describe it to you. It's great for describing pictures. We have lots of our friends sending out text messages with pictures. Oh, look what I just saw on the hike this afternoon. And I can have any of these apps describe those pictures to me.
The other thing that we sometimes use AI for is if I'm having trouble finding an appropriate image to post with an episode of Eyes on Success, I'll ask AI to generate said image. So for this episode, because we're talking about the evolution of access technology, I asked Gemini to generate an image showing examples of various types of adaptive tech that have been implemented over the years. And sure enough, it did. It did a super job. There's maybe a dozen items in there, all the way from a manual typewriter to a smartphone. And then how were you able to see the image?
Well, again, I use one of those tools. I just look at it on my computer and ask JAWS to describe the image. I could send it to Be My Eyes and ask Be My Eyes to describe it, or any of these other services. And I even use some of the image generation tools. Our grandkids, who range between 8 and 10, at that age, they like pictures. So I'll generate pictures for them of them flying in the air, Super Braden, Super Bryce, and they love them.
So what other devices have you been making good use of?
I still use the Braille display from my Pac-Mate, but I don't use the device itself anymore because it's based on a very old operating system. But I make most use of my phone these days and some of the capabilities built into JAWS and some of these other AI services. And pretty soon, we'll be having AI agents to interact with websites where you can ask the AI, find me a podcast on so-and-so on the Eyes on Success website and describe the podcast that may be about AI to me and then find it and download it for me. This is coming very soon and you'll have more capabilities like that in the iPhone within another year.
So in addition to all of the tools that are available on smartphones, in the last few years, progressively more companies have been offering smart eyeglasses. What about those?
It is amazing. Those have become very popular and also very prolific. This kind of started with some very expensive smart glasses a few years ago. But last year, you saw the introduction of the Meta Ray-Ban glasses, which have become very popular in the blindness community. And now they're introducing their next generation model with even more power. And there are the Ally Solo smart glasses and a number of other glasses that are being introduced almost weekly these days. Maybe next year we'll even see smart glasses from Apple. What will that be like?
We actually aired a show over 11 years ago, in which we talked to some people who had had the opportunity to try out the Google Glass, which was possibly the earliest of these smart glasses. But boy, have they come a long way in both price and capabilities.
I'm waiting for the smart robot that washes your dishes.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice, especially now that our dishwasher is broken.
Fingers crossed.
So now that we're retired, we're spending more time around the house. How do you deal with the various appliances and whatnot that we've got?
Well, there's still room for using some low-tech solutions. We have bumps all over everything. Our microwave, because it's old enough so that the touchscreen display is not accessible. Our dishwasher does not have real buttons.
But it will. We're buying a new one.
Well, that's true, but the old one has dots that you put on it. So we're big fans of putting dots and low-tech solutions. So again, as we said in the tip, consider all solutions, all options, depending on the task or the job that you want to do. There are lots of options these days and lots of ways to use them. Whatever is best for each person for a particular situation. Well, we could go on and on forever, but if you want to learn more about some of these topics, you can always use the search field on our website. Search for things like AI or smartphones, etc., and there's lots of shows there you can find. In the meantime, Nancy, why don't you tell our listeners what we have cooked up for next week?
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking with an audiobook narrator whose voice will probably be very familiar to you. Scott Brick has narrated over 1,200 audiobooks, including some of the biggest bestsellers by Baldacci and Crichton and Lee Child and Truman Capote and on and on and on. And he talked with us about what it's like being an audiobook narrator and also the service that he provides, encouraging and coaching new people to get into the field of audiobook narration.
That was a real fun interview, and so we hope you'll join us next week for that episode.
It was almost like having Jack Reacher in the room with us. You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.